Okay, ready? So, okay, I want to let everybody in. Just remember, I gotta hold on one second. I'm getting feedback off somebody before I cut everybody over here. All right, I think we're good now. All right, hold on. I think it's Maria. All right, so I'm gonna let everybody in. Just remember, we're gonna get the recording going, then do your thing, and then talk about translation, and then let me.
This is great, Cameron. Could I do a sound check? Because I'm going to be sharing for Bishop's Peak. Can you hear me clearly?
I can hear you.
Beautiful. Thank you.
All right. So we're going to let everybody in. 3, 2, 1.
This meeting is being recorded.
Good evening and welcome to the October 6th, 2020 meeting of San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Trustees. At this time, as we begin, we would ask those in attendance to please keep your videos off and your audios muted unless presenting information or speaking in public comment. We are also offering translation services for our Spanish-speaking attendees. To access translation, please click on the globe at the bottom of your screen and then the language. At this time, we would like to ask if anyone who needs translation, please click on the participants icon at the bottom of your screen and raise your hand.
Buenas tardes, bienvenidos a todos. Esta junta va a estar traducida al español. Si necesitan el servicio de intérprete, en unos minutos van a ver un globo en la pantalla. Por favor, hagan clic y seleccionen el lenguaje que será español.
Well, you know, they didn't start until after six. I had to call them.
All right, the board met in closed session and we discussed anticipated litigation and a personnel review.
They didn't even start the thing.
At this time, we need to seek consensus on the order of business. Everyone all right with the agenda of the board?
No, we're
get
just
a thumbs
attendee,
up.
As far as I know.
That'll work. Thank you. All right. Yeah. Next, we have some minutes to go through, so bear with me, everyone. This is not the most exciting part of our meeting, but we'll get through it.
Okay.
I'm looking for approval of the minutes of July 16, 2020.
Hey, you gonna start this?
Questions, comments, revisions? If not, I would appreciate a motion, please.
I'd like to do an audio test.
So moved.
True.
Thank you.
And I have push record buttons. It's just that I'd like to know that it's working and things like this.
I'll second.
Okay. So I'm going to quickly go through. Mark.
All right. Have fun.
Yes. Please remember that if you unmute just briefly to tell me, that's great, because
yeah,
I'm looking
down
at
right.
I wasn't
too worried about them.
Catherine.
I figured, you know,
yes.
It's
yes.
Kind of like the fledgling bird.
Evelyn.
Yes.
Okay.
Walter.
Yes, 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 yes.
You know, there's a number
Marilyn.
On there. He probably just clicked.
Chris.
But it's good
yes.
That he knows.
And me, so, yes.
Thank you,
all
Bob.
Right. Next, we have minutes of September 1st, 2020. You can have a motion and then a second.
I'll move
all right.
Minutes. Already get them?
No, go ahead, Walt.
I'll move minutes of, don't tell me, September.
Okay.
September 1st.
Okay.
September 1st. Thank you. I'm still looking for it on the agenda. Go.
All right. And a second.
Cool.
I'll second.
Mark, thank you.
Yep.
Okay, going through the list. Mark.
Yes.
Catherine.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Evelyn.
Yes.
Walt. Yes, you made the motion. Marilyn.
Yes.
Chris.
Yes.
And me, yes. All right, next. We're halfway through. Minutes of September 10th, 2020. I will move to accept those minutes from the chair.
I will second Ellen's motion.
Thank you. All right. We'll mix it up. Evelyn.
Yes.
Walter.
Yes.
Marilyn?
Yes.
Chris?
Yes.
Me? Yes. Mark?
Mark, yes.
Catherine? Oh,
sorry.
Yes.
Okay. Catherine is feeling very particularly dramatic tonight. All right. And lastly, the minutes of September 15th, 2020. Chris, wouldn't you like to make this motion?
Sure, I'll make the motion. I move approval of the minutes of September 15th, 2020.
And I'll second.
Thank you. And Marilyn is a second. All right, me, yes. Chris?
Yes.
Marilyn?
Yes.
Walt?
Yes.
Evelyn?
Yes.
Catherine?
Yes.
And Mark?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. All right, we're done with that. And Catherine, you sound much more yourself, and Jeremy has wings on his feet.
Yeah.
All right. Our next section is student representatives to the board. I thought I saw some students here. Do we have students? Any of our reps?
Benjamin's here.
Benjamin.
Yeah, hey there. Going
to us. Yeah, we're happy to see you. Welcome.
Yeah, so on Slough High campus, we had some few fun things going on. Today we just had our first virtual rally drop on YouTube. So that was cool. We highlighted some of the academic scholars and had a fun class activity game. And also something we're doing is making up for the lack of student of the month. Because last year at Slough High, we had teachers pick students and they would go to a barbecue at lunch. And obviously we can't do that this year. So what happens is the teachers still pick their, you know, most hardworking student of the month. And what we do is we give them a Jamba Juice gift card paid for by the Black and Gold Boosters and also a free cookie at Insomnia Cookies. So that's kind of something fun. Also all of our athletes from water polo, cross country, football, and volleyball are super happy right now because they just got back on campus and are starting to practice again, which is super fun. And we had our club rush last week, and every day we're getting more and more clubs, new and upcoming ones on campus, which is a great time. And so one of our biggest events of the year is actually coming up in just under 10 days. We have this scavenger hunt for all the kids on campus where we're giving away prizes to those who choose to participate. And we have this list of spots to go in Slough, local spots like Bubblegum Alley, Madonna Mountain, just everywhere around town. And if you go there, take a picture and submit it, then we have some prizes to give away for them. So just to encourage some spirit, even though everything's online as of now. But yeah, that's what's going on campus.
Thank you. I love to hear the way you're trying to make these things work, even virtually, remotely, all that. I think it's great that you're being very creative and responsive to your peers. So thanks for that.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. And is anyone else here? Do we have any of our other? Oh,
I see Maria raising her hand, Ellen.
Oh, you do. Okay, Maria.
That's their hand signs for switching between translators.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. No worries.
Yeah. Okay. So
Rosalie is not here tonight.
Rosalie's not here tonight. Okay. All right. Thank you. So our next item is moving on to 6.02, which is Bishop's Peak Program Highlights.
Yeah, good evening. We have Principal Dan Block and Teacher Greg Kramer to share some highlights from Bishop's Peak tonight.
Good evening, everybody. Dan Block here from Bishop's Peak Elementary School. I'm pleased to introduce Greg Kramer. Greg is a teacher who just has this great sense of community within his classroom. When he and his classroom joined us from C.L. Smith several years ago, Greg brought a saying that we still use today is take care of this place. Greg embodies that in his classroom. His students are always doing projects. But this year's been unique for Greg. He took on a garden project through a grant, a flower project he'll tell you about. But getting ready for that, Greg put in countless hours last spring and over the summer transforming our garden area. And so just on behalf of Bishop Speak, Bishop Speak staff, we just wanted to reach out and thank Greg. And you guys will be thrilled with what's going on up at the Bishop Speak Garden with Greg and his students.
All right. Good morning. Good evening, everybody. It's good to be here. If I could share my screen with you, I'll take you through a little presentation we have.
You have sharing access.
Do I have access to it now?
Yes, you do.
Okay. All right. Close this up. So I'm a fifth and sixth grade teacher here at Bishop's Peak. And as Dan mentioned, I do love doing projects, long-term projects with our students. And I have two student projects to share with you. I added one because one of them is we're trying to put the student back into the project because it started right about the time that we had to go into a distant learning format. So first I'll share with you the barn owl box that my students built. We had a school-wide STEAM night planned that got canceled, of course, in early spring. And up by our school, I'm actually looking out the window at our wildlife area here. On the western end, we have this wildlife corridor, a seasonal spring that goes through. And we create a little nature trail there, and the kids oftentimes see evidence of larger animals, birds of prey, and they wanted to build a barn owl box. So we started doing the research on barn owl boxes, and we got the dimensions. We talked about what barn owls need.
Okay. I'm glad you caught that.
Because we're building it. We built the frame. And if I'm going too quickly and my slides aren't keeping up with me, please let me know. Is it okay so far?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, perfect. Okay. So the students, we built the frame. You can see them putting some of the wood together. You can see a divider right here. So we talked about prey that might go after them. So this is a divider. So a great horned owl, a red-tailed hawk, couldn't reach in and get them. Raccoons, no problems, because you'll see we mounted on a pole here. Now, they saw the whole thing built, but they never saw it mounted because that's when they were no longer allowed to come into school. So they saw the entire thing on the picnic table or in the classroom built, but they never got to see it mounted. We weren't sure. You can see there's tons of trees around. Like, would an owl ever want to be in this box? And sure enough, one morning I was up there and I heard scratching above my head. And male or female, wasn't sure, was peeking out, looking right down at me about 6 feet over my head, and flew the corridor of the garden. And I did a little Irish jig and texted everyone and let all the kids know on email that it works. We got adults in there now. So I wasn't sure if we were ever going to see a baby come out of it. So I was biking up to school one morning, and on the rail of my classroom, I saw something, like I thought someone left me a plant. And so I'll share this little video with you. So I'm going to talk over my voice because it sounds like Fred Rogers when I talk for my students. But I'm walking through here, and right in front of you, you can see what was on the rail of my classroom. So I started doing another dance, but I kept the camera fairly steady. You can see the barn owl box up there. And as I'm walking towards them, I'm balancing the fact that I know I shouldn't get too close to stress them out, but I really wanted a photo to share with my students since they weren't here in person. So right now I'm about at the edge of it. Should I keep going and then I stop? Okay, so we know it worked, and there he or she is. Maybe a few months old, about 8 or 9, they fledge, and they leave the nest, and this is what I sent to my students from the project they built. You can see the hole height is meant to be the height that they're, when they can get out of that hole, they're old enough to fly. If you can read upside down, it says room 29, barn owl box, and the date, sadly, 3/13/20, right about the time that we shut it down. So the students were part of this project all the way up until it got mounted on the pole. My son welded the bracket underneath for it. That lid pops open. So each year we'll clean this. I'll put some sawdust in there, some shavings, And then hopefully we'll get the mates to come back year after year. It worked the first year. We might get it another time. Second time, if you saw my first slide, students were in parentheses because this is a student enterprise. And we applied for a foundational grant for a flower enterprise. We have 18 flower beds up here. And with our new cafeteria, the plan was to move the new beds down by the cafeteria to be closer to the source of the food. So we have 18 beds up here. And we put in an enterprise like, let's start a flower project. Let's get the kids' hands dirty from start to finish. A cut flower program that goes year after year. The kids will plant, harvest, sell out front. Money goes directly back to the PTA to pay for all those wonderful trips we do. Fourth grade going to Monterey Bay Aquarium. Fifth grade going up to Camp Ocean Pines. And sixth graders going to Yosemite. So we had to recondition the beds. So I went up to Cal Poly. And I'm sorry about talking about me. It's supposed to be we, students. And that was a quotation mark, students. They will be back. We went up to Cal Poly, talked to Kevin and Mike in the operations center up there, farm operations. They said, we will give you whatever you want. We'll bring a big dump truck up there. We'll take care of you. I said, a dump truck is too much and you can't get as close as I need. How about filling up the trucks? So whenever I wanted, I could call them up. They'd say, hey, Tuesday morning, can you come up here? Fill up the trucks. The most beautiful compost around. So the blue truck, that holds 2 cubic yards. My son's truck on the left holds 1. So the blue truck, we filled up 4 times. My son's truck twice. So altogether 10 cubic yards of soil, which would be over $400. And they took good care of us. We were able to get the truck really close to the garden area. Again, envision with me, students doing this project instead of me. My students love doing this type of work. And I have found at all the sites that I've worked at, all students love doing this type of work, getting their hands dirty. There was one fortunate or unfortunate student up there. She's my friend's child, Jessa. She now is a sixth grader. And so she was up there running around and I asked her, Jessa, I need a few shots of a student. Do you mind? So Jessa was very willing to start unloading some of that. And as I'm going through, I'm going to stop. Please remember this scene here. Because the last video is going to refer back to what you're seeing here. Okay. I also employed my daughter in the hat and two of my nieces, to help me move the soil in between teaching. I had to make sure I put that in there. So you can see the beds. You're only seeing 1 row of 5 here. We have 2 rows like this and another set of 2 sets of 4 on the other side. We put the tarp down to keep the weeds down. There's Jessa emptying a load. We, as we're here, these are the manifolds for the irrigation we had to go through, repair those, pull the wire inside. It's run by a timer in the garden shed over here. We were able to rebuild those. Once we got all the beds topped off, we rototilled it prior. The older soil we rototilled, and then we poured the new stuff in. And if you've ever rototilled soil, when the tines disappear all the way down that deep, you know you have some good soil. So that Cal Poly compost, here's a plug for them, beautiful, beautiful soil. So we dug it all the way down till each of the 18 beds as deep as we could go. You can see the irrigation here. We had to extend the irrigation all the way and cleared it all. These oleander trees, that made the rototilling hard because they were reaching their roots into the good soil. All this is covered now in tarp. So it's tarp all the way down now for the kids to walk on. What we were able to do because of the schools and we went into the distant learning, we had this whole back row of beds. I told Dan, you know, we're not going to be using these. These might be for our spring flowers. Let's open it up for some of the families that go to Bishop Peak. So this entire row, 9 beds in all, were used by families from our community at Bishop's Peak for a summer harvest. And now I'm seeing the families up here now and they're starting to pull them out. And I said, we're going to need them again. So you just had the summer harvest. The photo you'll see is this is planted up right now. So this is planted here. This is our classroom. When I moved over here, Dan had a room for me. And I said, I've already picked out the room that I think I want to be in. And it's this one right next door to the garden. And then this area that I'm going to show you at the end. Okay. We ordered the tubers. These are dahlia tubers. One of them has an eye on it. And we probably ordered about 50 of these a set. So that's considered one right there. Again, the kids would be doing this, getting rid of any that are wrinkled, cutting them, prepping them, cleaning them up. You put them in the ground, no need to water until they start sprouting. Mother Nature agrees with what you're doing. You'll get flowers. And that's one row. That's about 50 dahlia tubers. Those stakes are about 5 feet tall. And so the kids, I keep saying this way, envision, the kids will be tying those up, cutting those flowers. The more you cut them, the more they give. We've probably cut 500 to 800 dahlia flowers off of those as well. The back row here, this is kind of the end of our parents' gardening. You can see some tomato bushes. So this whole row was for our families, and we're taking up this side. So we harvested. We came out with quite a few flowers. We haven't sold a single one. We ended up giving them to teachers, keeping our office looking good. During orientation with the TK families, kindergarten families, we had buckets of these on the table. So when our new families came to BP, they were able to take a flower or two in addition to the materials they were picking up from their teachers. We also went to Canyon View Church when they were doing the food boxes, brought a bunch of flowers that they could add to their boxes. We made it to Laguna one time when Laguna was doing their massive food drop boxes is there. So you can see quite a few right there alone in those buckets. I think they're beautiful. So we had some dahlias here and we're going to mix it up. It'll be up to the kids in phase two reopening what we plant next. But these are dahlias here. We had some sunflowers going. We needed a way to transport them. So the funny part is I was looking for one of these bikes for my mother. And we got one. My sister found one down in Riverside. And my mother goes, my 85-year-old mother, she says, those are for old people. So, or young. Old or young. I thought, Mom, I got a perfect use for it. This seat drops down. It's a three-wheel. Even if you don't drive a two-wheel drive bike, all my kids can ride this bicycle. You can see the cargo rack in the back. We'll make some galvanized buckets. We'll figure out some sort of system here. Envision the kids cut the flowers. They put it in their buckets with water. Yeah. This bike gets brought to the front of our brand new office in the shade somehow. And parents upon pickup or during the day, whenever, stop by, purchase a flower or two or 10 or 12. And the money goes to BP. They're beautiful flowers. The dahlia is a start. We're not sure what's up next. We could be putting in sweet peas. It's going to be up to the kids. As all goes as planned, next Thursday, October 15th, we'll be phase two reopening with our kids in less intensive SDCs. I think that would probably sell pretty well. And the kids do too. The last one I wanted to share with you is that outdoor area that I asked you to keep in mind. With school reopening and our whole garden kind of coming into a good place right now, we have a room for an outdoor classroom out there. So I wanted to show you this, and I just took this video this afternoon. So special thanks here. You can see here to our Wendy Hall, our custodian. She got the chips ordered and organized. BG&T came in and spread them out. You can see the whiteboard there for teaching. Dan Block, Principal Dan, brought his power washer out. Hit those sun sails to clean them up. We have the picnic tables in the distance. You can see the barn owl box there. So that brings me, I'm sorry, hopefully I didn't speak too quickly. That brings me to the end of the two projects. Student project, it'll be a student project once again when we get the kids back, I'm sure. And questions for me, gardening experience and advice, we would love it. It's the first time for us. Yes, Chris.
So, as you know, Greg, I'm a retired special educator. Mm-hmm. And I just think this is fantastic. I wonder if you could just explain for everybody here some of how this just dovetails into the curriculum that you're trying to teach, the reading, the writing, the math, and just how important it is for our students to be able to engage in these things and what they learn from it, because I think it's just super important.
All right, thanks. Good question. So the student project for the flower garden, I mean, you can imagine the math involved in the spacing. Yeah, the flower beds, the square footage. Again, if they were here, that's all project-based learning for math. How much soil we needed. What would we tell Cal Poly we would need for the math alone. The research involved in that, the tech skills, they'll be going through my garden catalogs online and in hand, looking for what we're going to be planting next. I'm a firm believer in long-term projects, delayed gratification. We have a lot of instant gratification. And I like these kids, you know, I think of building a boat with the master craftsman. There's a lot of programs where that's their program. They build a boat by hand with hand tools with the master craftsman or craftsperson, craftswoman. And long-term projects matter. And for them to see a project like, you know, our garden beds out here and to see it was weeds. They started with me. They were pulling weeds. We were clearing beds. And to go from that to that last vase of flowers that people are coming from our community and buying, there's true value in that. So long-term projects are good. The barn out box was a little bit quicker, about a month. That was a little bit quicker for them. But this is a long-term ongoing project for them. So even though I missed them last part of last spring and this fall, hopefully I'll get them back and we'll begin where we left off. So thank you for that.
Mark.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I'm looking at this and as a former member of the 24th District PTA board, I got to thank you on behalf of this PTA and I'm sure they have, but I'm wondering how replicable this is. Are you available at least by phone?
I am, but I got to tell you, I'm nervous by nature. And so I'm out, you know, we had a 120 degree day here. These plants are not made for that, but they came through it pretty well. So my father was a farmer. I grew up on a citrus farm. He was down in Riverside and he would say feast or famine, especially with the avocados. I am available, but I feel like I'm a rookie at this too. I'm pretty good with fruit trees. I'm not a big flower person, but I'm going to have to become a big flower person. I get a lot of advice from our secretary, Sarah Johnson. She goes, this will sell, Greg. This will sell. I'm more wildflowers and succulents and cacti flowers. But I'm learning. But, Mark, I would be interested in talking to you if others would be open to it. I got to tell you, it's a lot of work.
Yeah, it looks like it. You're not, I have to tell you, it looks like it. And I have to tell you, the only flowers I grow are to feed the rabbits. So. And all the other little critters. So thank you. Yeah.
And we put that barn owl box up there to get rid of the rabbits. Anyone else for me?
Greg, thank you so much. I love that you're saying you're new at this because it means that you're learning with your students. And that's really awesome. I think that's great. And Dr. Prater is waving his hand around.
So. Yeah, Ellen, I'm not sure you saw, but Catherine, you had your hand up in the background. I knew you wanted to say something.
I'll see you.
Hi, Catherine.
Okay, I'm no longer in the echo chamber, so this is Mr. Kramer, I just have to congratulate you because I know how competitive those San Luis Coastal Education Foundation grants are. So congratulations to you and your students for achieving that. And it's absolutely gorgeous what you've done. And I just thank you for going through the process and walking away with the grant. Good job.
I appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you again. We'll look forward to coming by and seeing it in person.
Come up. It's a beautiful area. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you, Greg. Thanks very much. All right. Our next agenda item is correspondence. And at the time of the agenda was published, we had received official correspondence from, and please forgive mispronunciations of names, Justin Weave regarding the waiver application and Stacy Schaefer's regarding distance learning. All right. At this time, we welcome comments on matters of district interest. And so we can listen to your comments. If you, at this time in person, I have some that have been submitted in writing that I will read. Please be aware that the board can't engage in discussion or take action on items not listed on the agenda. This is typically this time of general correspondence is for, or in public comment is for individuals or representatives of a group to address the board on issues not listed later in the agenda. Speakers who wish to discuss agendas on the agenda, items on the agenda later on, are requested to please wait until that item comes before the board. However, if your agenda item that you're interested in appears later, feel free to let us know now. Public comments for our agenda items can be emailed to district@slcusd.org. And then in that subject line, please identify the agenda topic you wish to discuss or address. If you wish to submit a public comment on more than one agenda item, please send a separate email for each comment. Any relevant written comment submitted by 3 p.m. on the day prior to the meeting will be read on the record during the meeting. If you submit written comments, you will not be permitted to also speak on that same comment. It's kind of, you make a choice between either submitting a written comment or speaking. Public comment time is limited to 3 minutes, or if writing your comments, that comes to about 450 words. Any portion of a written comment that extends beyond the 450 word limit will not be read aloud beyond the 450 words. And we will stop you at the 3 minute mark for oral public comments. If you wish to speak during the meeting, click on that participants icon at the bottom of your screen and select the raise your hand. And we have folks here who assist us greatly during every meeting who will let me know, and we'll make sure that you're in the lineup and we will call on you at the appropriate time. All right, so at this time I'm going to read the public comments that were submitted for this meeting. And hold on 1 second while I also get I print out the ones that I get in time and then read others from the computer. All right, so first is from Rob Morrow. What is SAFE? All the correspondence I received through Parent Square refers to a desire to return to school when it's safe. But what is that? There will still be risk from COVID-19 for the next several years, even after a vaccine is in place. SAFE is based on an individual's perspective on acceptable risk. An individual's risk is dependent on age, pre-existing condition, etc. Rebecca Russell. My daughter is in kinder at Baywood. We are excited for the dual immersion program and bought a home in the neighborhood to assure our child's admittance. When fall was set by a DL, we enthusiastically set up a classroom. As the year began, our concerns grew. The first 5 weeks of class connectivity resulted in no uninterrupted sessions. An ES 5-year-old cannot get invested in this process. Our friend's daughter is in first grade at Baywood, so we planned a classroom so both students could simulate a school environment, hoping to allow a social-emotional experience of regular school. We found it wouldn't work since K's schedule is offset. Though SLCUSD moved forward with DL, the plan to also start immersion was still implemented. By week 7, my child has learned little Spanish and retained almost none of the education material. DL is necessary, but immersion has not yet been implemented. SLCUSD chose to experiment with our children. It is failing. Our ESKs are being done a disservice. Our greatest concern is lack of engagement in this first year. She is frustrated, dreads school, struggles to pay attention for 2 meetings, forget 3. Now a 4th session is added. We can't expect a 5-year-old to watch a screen in a language she doesn't understand so much of the day. Understanding, we are working with the school for solutions, exchanging devices and hotspots. I met with her teacher twice, and I twice discussed concerns and solutions with Stevens. I volunteered time to create more digitally engaging content. We implemented a reward system recommended by Stevens. We considered removing Rachel for the year to homeschool her through an accredited high school program, but was told by Stevens that would likely result in Rachel not being admitted to Baywood for the rest of elementary school. We are at a loss how to help Rachel. We are frustrated with the seeming disregard for feedback. I'm asking you, please hear our concerns and help our children get some of the education they deserve. Provide parents more flexibility in implementing curriculum while caring for the needs of their student, caring for siblings, and working to provide for economic needs. You are losing a generation of students with the current approach. Something has to give. It shouldn't be our children. Lisa Bogrova. In light of the county's sustained status in the red tier for 14 days and therefore qualified to reopen as of today to in-person instruction, would individual schools be making those decisions, or is there a district-wide directive to remain closed to in-person instruction regardless through 2020? Also, if allowed to be considered for in-person instruction, will the district be assisting individual schools in submission of individual reopening plans? Okay. Stan Yoshinobu. Dear SLCUSD Board, I am writing today to caution against hastily reopening our schools, especially our secondary schools, where students are more likely to spread the coronavirus. While confirmed cases have come down recently from the summer peak, they are still much higher than they were in the spring. The risks are not significantly lower than they were in spring or summer. I fully understand that we are sick and tired of virtual teaching and learning, and many loud voices are asking for a return to normal, but we must remain disciplined. In just a few months, we may have better testing, better treatments, and fewer cases. With the flu season about to start and cases ticking back up again due to reopening colleges and indoor dining, it is wisest to take a wait and see approach. Please let science catch up before rushing back to in-person instruction. Perhaps most importantly, I ask you to put at the center of your decision poor and minority students and their families. While middle-class families might have access to testing and good health care, that is not necessarily the reality for a large number of people in our community. At present, the Latinx community accounts for 46% of the positive cases, even though they only represent 23% of the county's population. COVID-19 is not only a health and safety issue, it is also a justice issue. I am deeply concerned that a rush to reopen will not only lead to an outbreak, but also disproportionately affect those who are most at risk, all the while we may be in a much better place in just a few months. Thank you. Okay, and next I have that Lena Egan would like to address the board in person.
Dear esteemed school board members, bearing in mind the Diablo Canyon closure is on the horizon, what is our moonshot in San Luis Coastal? What is our vision for the next 5 years, 10 years? On January 12, 2016, President Obama announced the Cancer Moonshot Initiative with Vice President Joe Biden to lead. Less than 3 months ago, my sister was diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer. She is a devoted wife and mom of 3 darling girls who are the same age as my boys. My sister's an athlete, never smoked, has no risk factors. We are devastated. Cancer and chemo during COVID has been incredibly difficult for her. Thankfully, she appears to be responding to chemo and recently approved immunotherapy treatments for now. There's no cure for lung cancer. My sons want to know how they can help their aunt. My sixth grader is doing his Teach TED Talk on the immune system. He also knitted her a beanie to keep her bald head warm. My ninth grader named his aunt as the person that inspires him the most and has been reading my husband's Chemistry and Engineering News magazine. Can my sons cure cancer someday? Maybe. However, if they wish to pursue careers in scientific research, they would be less prepared than their peers in college. We do not have advanced life science courses. They cannot participate in pre-college courses like molecular oncology that requires AP biology. We do not have a formal summer science research program. This does not have to be the case. We have Cal Poly professors who are parents in our school district that are interested in making this happen for our students. In fact, my husband is one of them. He mentored a Paso Robles High School student for summer research in 2019. We could pay for these online advanced courses and network for summer research opportunities for our boys, but we believe in equity and access. Any student who has demonstrated interest in and commitment to advancing their studies in science should have access to these advanced courses and summer research opportunities too. We need many students to help cure many cancers. This is a moonshot worth fighting for and fighting for now, as cancer does not stop for COVID. Please augment our advanced science courses next year. Give our kids a chance. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Next, I have Sean McNabb.
Hi. I just wanted to ask a question about the attendance schedule and the attendance requirement and ask the board about any chance of making that just be a way to drop the attendance requirements and fund the schools as if every student was there 100% of the time. I know that it is a California thing. I know it's an attendance, a daily attendance issue. But in these times, that doesn't seem to make sense. And it would free up all sorts of resources to focus on the students, on getting us through this pandemic, getting their education. Among other things, it would free up a lot of accounting resources that can be used elsewhere. It'd help reduce the anxiety and scrambling of students, teachers, parents who find themselves trying to do attendance because they've got technical difficulties or the student can't get in, and then later having to follow up with emails to a teacher to say that I'm being, you know, that the student was attending. And it would free the school up from having to follow up the daily attendance and call me or email me to ask if my student attended. The policy seems ill-suited to our current situation and budgets. And we all know that the big reason of focusing on attendance is because it's tied to funding. Let's not play games that it's because it's just because we want to keep the kids in school. It is really tied to attendance or funding. And we know that everybody plays a loophole. So I'm thinking this year of all years, we could drop the requirement and fund the schools as if everybody was 100% attendance. So the schools had the money to pay for the programs they have, and they have the resources to focus on the students that are having attendance problems and are having truancy problems. I don't think it makes sense at this time to have that program. And I would like the board to maybe go back and push for, hey, can we just say fund the school if it's 100% attendance this year? Next year, we can go back to the program, great. But this year, free up the resources for something else.
Thank you. I'm going to ask Dr. Prater if he would like to make one clarifying remark with regard to our funding, please.
Yes, I can. We are a basic aid or community funded school district. So we receive our funding from local property taxes. And the requirement of attendance in this case happens to be connected to other state revenues, but not our primary revenues. The driver here for us is making sure our kids are in their seats and hopefully learning. And if they're not, then that's our way of being able to identify kids that are disconnected or off the tracks. That's why we do that. And yes, it's onerous. It's a lot of work, Mr. McNabb. I see it. But it's really important.
Okay. You did say there was money coming from the state as well for attendance. And that's the part that I'm talking about. And I do understand the students being engaged, but it is added overhead. So making it easier. Thank you. But thank you for the explanation and thank you for the clarification. I was unaware of that first part.
Thank you for your comments. All right, it appears that that there is no one else on this particular agenda topic. We do have, we will see if there's public comment as we continue to go through the agenda. All right, our next agenda item is, it's time for our superintendent's updates, please. First is business and budget, Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, so just a couple of things to update the board on. First, we're, you know, school is going on even though virtual, right? And so we're trying to find solutions to some of our issues that come up. And one of those is school pictures. So yearbooks throughout the grade levels, those types of things. So for the board to know, I've been working with the secondary principals to start, hopefully going to go down to the elementary as well, and looking at trying to get some informal bids for photographers to help us with that process, so we can get pictures out and kids can still have yearbooks and continue on. So I'll keep you kind of updated on how that goes. With all of the funding that the board has received, you know, in terms of the CARES Act and everything else, it all comes with additional paperwork. And so just, you know, kudos to Julie Lang for putting all of that together and, you know, all the documentation that goes along with any federal dollars that the district receives. It's super important. And so part of the what we're going to be bringing to the board probably here in the last meeting in November is going to be a budget overview for parents. And so that's one of the requirements that this year that goes along with the accountability plan. And so we'll be sharing that with the board, as well as all of our constituents and parents at the end of November. You know, we're still focused on safety throughout the district. And so, you know, planning for the future, we are doing some fencing projects that came up with our safety, you know, kind of our safety look with Resolute of the last couple of years. So currently working with Bishop's Peak as well as Sinchheimer School. Those are two schools that currently have childcare programs on them. That had a lot of, you know, people coming onto campus, those types of things during this situation. So we are using some deferred maintenance funds to help with those. And so those are kind of the key things happening right now over the past week. Of course, we're also looking at, you know, what it's going to take to be back in person with school. So currently working with principals on their classrooms, numbers, setting up desks, getting ready so that when the board does make that decision, if they make that decision, we'll be prepared. But definitely a lot that goes into the planning and setup that will entail as we move forward. But we are working on it. And then lastly, during the meeting today, we are going to ask the board to approve a couple of contracts to begin surveillance testing. And I'll be sharing a little bit more about that later on in the agenda.
Thank you. All right. Next, we have our educational services and COVID-19 update.
Yes, thank you. So as we probably have all heard that our county, due to our county numbers, has moved from the purple classification by the state to the red classification, which does open up some parameters for us. You know, just thinking about our county numbers over the past week, our county's averaged 21 new cases per day. So as it's classified, it's still substantial, yet does open up a little bit of opportunity for us. So just to give you an update on, you know, kind of along those lines on the in-person opportunities that we've been able to move forward with, we started with a phase one of in-person during the day academic opportunities on September 8th. And we talked about that previously. Next, on October 1st, we were able to open up that you heard from the San Luis Obispo High student that we started with fall sports on October 1st, as well as a few extracurriculars at our middle schools and high schools. On October 12th, we're going to be able to do the next phase of that, which includes approximately 15 sports and extracurriculars at both of our comprehensive high schools, and a handful, about five-ish or a little less than five, at the middle schools as well. So started with a slow, methodical, in-person, phased-in approach there. And as I know we've said, and just to reemphasize that those are small group guidelines that we have to follow from the California Department of Public Health. We are obligated to follow those small group guidelines as well as following the guidance of our local public health department. So we've worked in close collaboration with local public health. They were extremely helpful in giving us advice and information about the parameters that we needed to follow. Some really clear guidelines that I mentioned last time. You'll remember the stable cohorts, meaning no more than 14 students, one or two adults, and they have to stay stable. That group cannot change in any way. Along with a lot of the other health guidelines that we've talked about as far as face coverings and spacing and sanitation and you know, really looking out for trying to do this in a way that provides for the a safe but yet in-person experience for everyone involved. So that's September 8th, first step. October 1st was the next step. October 12th will be further step. October 15th will be the next step after that, with additional in-person small group instruction taking place during the academic day. We also have another meeting tomorrow with the small groups saying what is the next step for our school sites. We surveyed staff, including certificated and classified staff, last week because we are operating off of staff members that are volunteering to come in person to work with students. So we have that information back and are devising the next step after we've had these kind of four steps. We'll be looking at what's the next step for students and staff to be able to continue that in-person progress that we've made so far. As Ryan mentioned, starting to implement staff surveillance testing for COVID. So you'll remember that we've been doing more of a self-health check. So anyone that's on campus for any purpose in person, a staff member should be doing a self-health check. Students attest to the adult that they're with when they show up that they have no symptoms. So the adults now, about 25% of them will be able to go on a rotating basis to be tested, which really follows the local guidelines, like I was saying, also helps to catch those that are either asymptomatic or maybe didn't catch their symptom within their own self-health check. So that has proved to be really impactful in other areas that we're watching that that are trying this. So we are following the local guidelines to be able to increase that as well. So tonight you're going to hear more about distance learning update, our multi-tiered system of support, as well as more about testing. So I know you've got more of that headed your way. So that is our update here. I know that there has been some questions and we hear things popping up, but we're staying in distance learning through December and really thoughtfully, methodically, still increasing our in-person opportunities that we started September 8th, and we'll continue that progress in ways that's best for staff and students. Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks very much. All right, and next is our Measure D update.
Yeah, so just a couple of things. One, it was great to see kids swimming in the pool. A slow high. I know the video went to the board. You know, at Morro Bay, we got to have the beautiful pool grand opening, all those types of things, but it was still nice, right? Just to see kids to be able to use our new facilities. Thanks to the community for funding those modernizations. And it was really great to see the kids out there a little bit. Lastly, Thursday, the board has a study session. We're going to be focusing on deferred maintenance. So while Measure D paid for a lot of projects, the board also sets aside each year a significant amount of money for deferred maintenance, right? And it's super important that we do that to keep our facilities up. And so Chris Bonin has a beautiful slideshow of the projects that we put together. And so I can't wait to share all of their hard work and labor on Thursday with the board.
Thank you, Ryan. All right, next is item 9.01, a public hearing on determination of sufficient textbooks and instructional materials.
Yes, good evening. Every year we need to go through the process of determining whether we're sufficient in textbooks and instructional materials according to the Williams Act. And it's a two-part process. The first board meeting, we hold a public hearing. And then at the next board meeting, there's a resolution. I can tell you that at this time, K-12, pre-K-12, the district is sufficient in all areas and subject areas that are covered under the Williams Act. I will say that we have had some connectivity issues, you know, with our transition to Aries and getting some textbooks hooked up, but we have resolved those and our instructional materials are good to go.
Thank you. All right, I'm going to ask if there is any public comment on this topic, and it appears that we have Sean McNabb.
Hi, yeah. Sorry. I just had one question about that when I read that. I know my daughter at the high school and her classmates are waiting on calculus books. So I guess they haven't arrived. Is that part of this, or are you aware that there's calculus books that are not in students' hands yet or are still on order?
Yes, we have ordered those books and you know, they will be coming in. I think some of the publishers have had problems getting books out, but, you know, all books will be covered and in students' hands as soon as we can get them there.
Is there a time frame for that? Is it going to
certainly check on it tomorrow. I'm not aware of the calculus books in particular.
Yeah, because they've already had their first evaluation, I guess. So
thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We don't generally engage in conversation, Mr. McNabb.
Yeah, understood.
If you have specific questions, you feel free to contact Mr. Mayfield.
Will do. Thank you.
Thank you.
Should be opening a public hearing where he can say what he wants to say, and then we'll move on.
Thanks very much. All right. Is there any other public comment at this time on this topic? All right. Then we will move on to
Ellen.
Yes,
I believe you're supposed to open a public hearing.
Oh, you're right. I'm looking at this in terms of the resolution. So the public hearing has been opened. Thank you, Mr. Millar. We've had our presentation and the community input. We will close the public hearing at this time. This was the Mr. Mayfield, we will vote on this next time, or are we voting on this tonight?
Next time. This is our first process.
Yeah, this is our first step. Thank you. We will now go to item 10.01, which is a resolution for authorization to teach outside of credential authorization. And it's my understanding that's Ms. Newland or Ms. McGrath.
Yes, Ms. Newland was having tech issues. Mr. Mayfield, is this the one you're covering for her, or is this a different one?
You're muted.
Sorry. We had a committee meeting to discuss the authorization to teach outside the credential areas, and we go through each individual teacher who is teaching outside the credential areas. The biggest issue we had this year was we offered STEAM electives at the middle school level, and so we had a few teachers that didn't have the exact authorization for that, but that's covered. And we went through with a committee of teachers to review each individual case and approve those authorizations.
This is something that comes to the board every fall.
Every fall.
For all teachers that teach outside their credential area. They have to meet certain requirements to be able to teach those classes. And so in this case, the committee looks at all of those and determines whether or not they have the justification or ability to do that.
Thank you. And you are seeking, this is an action item for this evening?
Yes, correct.
All right. At this time, I'll ask if there's any public comment with regard to this item. Okay, seeing none, we'll come back to the board. Any questions with regard to this? Walt?
Yeah, I know this is a routine item. I don't think I've ever seen most of the list contain a reference to steam. So if maybe briefly you could explain what it is about teaching within a steam program that requires additional credentialing or?
Well, this year, Mr. Millar, we offered steam electives through the virtual learning program. And so those were done through APEX. And APEX provides expert support, and they assured us that the teacher didn't need to have expertise in that particular subject area, that students can call APEX, get all the support they need for the particular STEAM courses. So we have some teachers that are covering those classes through the virtual learning program and the STEAM program at Loam's.
Thank you.
Mark?
Yeah, I just want to, it's along the same lines that Walter, STEAM caught my attention, science, technology, engineering, art, and math. And I have to say, there are a lot on here, but I have to also say how excited I am to see the emphasis and the number of classes that are being offered in STEAM. Thanks.
Yeah. There are also a very small number of students in most of those courses.
Even better.
If any other board questions or comments, then at this time.
I'll move resolution 5-20-21.
And I'll second.
Thank you. Catherine? Yes. Yeah, we're voting.
There you
yes.
Go.
Thank you. Evelyn?
Yes.
Walt?
Yes.
Marilyn?
Yes.
Chris?
Yes.
Me? Yes. And Mark?
Yes.
Thank you. We'll now move on to item 11.02. No, we are moving on to 11.01, which is our COVID-19 surveillance testing contracts. And Ryan, are you addressing this?
Yes, I am. So, you know, as Kim pointed out, part of public health's requirement for in-person instruction right now is that we set up surveillance testing. So specifically, we're supposed to take the number of staff, and this is any of our schools that have in-person teaching happening, we're supposed to test 25% every 2 weeks of all of the staff coming on site. So that includes both clerical teachers who don't have kids on class but are on campus. And so we had been looking at a variety of options, right? Things have come up, a lot of things that you see on both on the web as well as in the news media about, saliva tests and tests that you can send from your house and all those types of things. And so, fortunately, one of the CBO at Lucia Mar had told me about a contact he had made with Central Coast Pathology. And so they're actually a local business here in town that has a lab set up. They actually do the testing, they do the actual analysis of the testing, I should say, getting those results back. And so both Lucia Mar, Atascadero, Paso's looking at doing the same. And why we had looked at Central Coast Pathology in this case was they actually will come out to the school sites to do the testing. Teachers right now, of course, staff, overly stressed, lots of things happening in terms of instruction requests on them. So the ability to have these tests happen, much like we have our flu shot clinics through Costco. This would be kind of the same scenario where they would come set up shop in our multi-purpose rooms at sites. And so for us, it's going to be Taylor Gym at San Luis Obispo for the city schools. We're going to have Los Osos Middle School as a testing site for Los Osos, and then Morro Bay High School as a testing site for Morro Bay. So the goal would be to have those open in the morning before school, have some hours during the school time because we have coaches, we have other people who aren't necessarily tied to the instructional day, clerical staff can go over. It's a quick 5 minute, 3 to 5 minute, I should say, in this case, a nasal swab. So not the invasive, you know, kind of feather to the brain, you know, type of test, right? But a nasal swab. That is 90% effective in terms of analyzing whether or not somebody has COVID. The other tests right now, the take-home tests, those types of things that we discussed that are coming out, they just don't have the ability to test at a level that, you know, is something that public health is going to want to see. So they're like 60%. Possible. So this was kind of the best of both worlds in that we were able to do it at site, set it up. They actually will charge our insurance program. So for our teachers and our staff that have insurance, they actually charge our insurance carrier so that there's no cost to the district for those who have insurance. For those who don't have insurance, they go after CARES Act funding to pay for those tests. And then should CARES Act funding run out or there not be another stimulus package, should this go past December? Right now, the plan is just to have the surveillance test through December, and then we'll see where we're at in January in terms of needs and kind of reassess how the program's going. But that basically, is going to be every 2 weeks testing. We'll do 25% of the staff randomly. This testing is not for people who have symptoms. Okay. People who have symptoms should not come to work, should go to public health, do the testing that way. This is, as Kim mentioned, surveillance testing to potentially track and catch, any asymptomatic cases that may occur. A requirement of public health first to have in-person, instruction happening during the day. So, my hope is that this is, relatively inexpensive. There is a cost, of course. There is a fee, upwards $3,000 to $4,000 each testing week, basically, for them to come out and do the actual testing itself. But the actual charge for the test and the pathology aspect of it is something that insurance will pay for. So happy to answer any questions that we have. Kim can maybe tag team this with me in terms of addressing any questions the board has. But tonight, we're asking the board to approve the contracts with Westpac as well as with the other testing group. It's Walker Medical, I believe, right? And in terms of the contract itself, they're the ones that will actually come out and do the testing at the sites. They believe it's a 24 to 48 hour turnaround in terms of testing times to get the results. However, I think the contract reads 48 to 72, probably on their safe, just to be safe, right? In terms of getting those results. If there are positive cases that come out of the testing, they will call us and let us know about the positive cases. And then they will also fax all of the test results to the school district. And they have to call public health if there's a positive case and do all of the proper state reporting that's required should there be a positive case.
Thank you. I'll ask if there's any public comment on this item. And there is none, so I'll come back to the board, Mark.
Yep, hang on a second. Okay, so Ryan, thanks for answering some of the questions I had sent in to you earlier. How does the period when it's over a weekend, is that going to be considered 24, 72, 48?
You know what, honestly, I don't know. They don't do it on a time, like a business day aspect of it. They just said, between 24 and 48 hours, they'll let us know.
Okay.
So and then I can ask, the pathology about that, but I'm assuming that, number one, they should call us if there's any positive cases so that we can, let people know right away. And they'll definitely call the employee and public health, who then will put them in quarantine if there's a positive case.
And then when I did look at this, I did not see specifically that they would call us with the results. I saw that they would call County Health. So, you know, I have a concern about that. Yep. So just so you know,
we'll follow up on it. Yeah. They should definitely be contacting HR. You know, our HR department, human resources, is the one who deals with any and all staff COVID cases in terms of tracking, tracing, talking to the employee, working with county mental or county public health. So I'll follow up with that.
Okay. And then just my question that I had asked, and now I understand entirely, was should we be waiting until we begin a plan B? But as you were nice enough to remind me, we already have some kids back and yeah, some staff back. So I'm really happy to see that in there. Thanks.
Yes.
Chris, I see your hand, but I see that there's Jen from the public who would like to speak. Please state your full name and we'll start the clock.
My name is Jennifer Lertwatchera. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. I just had three comments. One is to really verify that the employee's insurance will cover a screening test, which is not a PCR test. I could see that possibly falling through, like not working out as optimistically as the Central Coast Pathology thinks.
Yep.
Number two, as far as like, I think it's checking boxes, yes, to be able to move ahead, but a 90% accuracy diagnostic screening tool. Well, it's like what happened at the White House. It is, it will miss one out of every 10 cases. And unless you do it twice in a row, then it gets up to 99%. So, I mean, it will help. It's like a drop, but it's not truly something you can depend on a lot. Number three is these kinds of tools generally have data for people who are symptomatic and not pre or asymptomatic. So I'm not sure how effective it would actually be if you're using it as a screening for asymptomatic or pre-symptomatic.
Thank you.
And again, we're just doing what public health is requiring us to do to have in-person instruction. So it's you know, some of it is the, you know, the district just following the requirements that they put forth. So I guess we could ask public health about why they require us to have surveillance testing. And if ultimately the district is on the hook for paying for the test. So if insurance doesn't pay or something else happens, there's a cost and a fee that's associated with it. And so if that's something that we're, you know, again, we can get out of this contract at any time if it becomes something that's unmanageable. So I'll have to, you know, we're going to monitor this on a week by week basis to make sure that it's, you know, it's effective and working out for our employees.
Thank you. All right, Chris.
Yeah. And thanks for the comments, Jen. I'm happy we're doing this. I'm happy that from what you're saying, Ryan, it appears that our insurance for our district employees, most of whom are covered with insurance, that this will cover that. Given Jen's comments, I think, you know, it would be worth double checking with CISC to make sure, obviously, Anthem Blue Cross. But I, for one, think this is a great step. And in fact, today or yesterday, I just read a comment about university testing and widespread university testing. And the comment was basically, you don't test people with the symptoms. That's like calling the fire department after your barn's burned down. What you want to do are you want to do the tests on the asymptomatic people to try to catch it as best you can. As Jen said, you know, 90% is not 99%. But I'm happy that we're making a start. And to me, this is a safety issue, and anything we can do to try to keep our kids and our staff members and ultimately our community safe, I think we need to do it.
Agreed.
Thank you. I have a couple of questions, and I think they're pretty easy, but they're just clarification for me. One is, so we're testing 25%. And so then we'll get to 100%. And then do we start over? Do we continue to rotate? Or do we, okay.
Start over. 25%.
Kind of a rolling process. All right. Yep. And then what about, I just want clarification about other people who would look, who were testing staff and were testing students. What about
not
others?
Testing students.
We're testing staff. What staff about only. Staff only? So if we have, would we test other adults who wish to be on campus? I mean, what about volunteers? Are we just not having volunteers?
Right now, no volunteers on campus. So this is any adult who is working for the school district, who is on these on any of the campus where we have in-person instruction happening.
Okay.
So, but we currently still do not allow, you know, just volunteers to come on campus. Now that could change in the future. And if that were the case, we would have to add them into it. You know, well, I guess as this unfolds, we'll have to talk about student testing. We'll have to talk about, you know, any other requirements that come forward with public health, right, in the future. But for now, this was kind of their, you know, their guidance. But yes, we have walk-on coaches. So anybody who's assisting, like with our extracurricular activities, who's on campus, they are all on this list to be, you know, part of the random test.
And lastly, if we're informed that there is a positive test result, who is responsible for contact tracing?
So, like I said, so that's the Human Resources Department. So at that point, you know, there's a lot of you know, legalities about medical health and issues, you know, in terms of, you know, discussing those. So the HR department, each one of them has each one of the people in the HR department kind of has a group that they oversee of employees. So CSEA, SEIU, you know, our teachers union as well. So they contact the individual. They will talk to them about who they've been in contact with. I mean, they have a whole script of things that they have to find out. And then we have to then notify those people, right? Much like public health as well, we'll do the same. So we'll be working directly with public health on any and all contract tracing that needs to happen and any quarantining or those types of things.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments from the board? This is an action item to approve the contracts with Westpac Labs and Walker Medical. So at this time, if we could have a motion, Chris?
Yeah, I move approval of item 11.01, COVID-19 surveillance testing contracts.
Thank you. And Walt is seconding. All right. Evelyn?
Yes.
Walt?
Yes.
Marilyn?
Yes.
Chris?
Yes.
Me? Yes. Mark?
Yes.
And Catherine? Catherine, you want to wave your hand? Are you approving this? Okay, thank you. All right, so that motion carries unanimously.
And we'll make sure to keep the board updated as this testing goes on, how it's going, how it's facilitating those types of things to make sure that you're aware of what's happening.
Okay, thank you, Ryan. All right, our next topic is distance learning update number 2.
Mandy, can I share my screen?
Yes, you can.
Okay, so this is an ongoing update which we'll be giving you on distance learning. It's a tough one because, you know, while we want to celebrate the heroic work of our teachers, and they really are doing an amazing job delivering instruction in this environment, we know at the same time just how difficult this is for families and especially our youngest students and most vulnerable students. So, you know, it's a balanced approach that we're going to take tonight as we look through our distance learning plan. As you know, I'll go through a little bit of, you know, a review here at the very beginning, but it's different from the spring. You know, we've heard from a lot of people that they appreciate the differences and the engagement of students. We now have SB 98, which was not in place in the spring. And there's quite a few things that are required under SB 98 that we must follow. It's more structured this time with schedules and periods at the secondary level and times where students need to be in attendance. We have pretty much a robust attendance that we take daily, and we're rolling that out with our some adjustments to that with our teachers this week. Every day there's synchronous teaching happening at all levels. We have a tiered student support system in the afternoons, kindergarten through 12th grade, which has been, I think, a great way for us to connect with students in small groups and really impact their learning. And Mrs. Storm's going to share a little bit about what that time looks like and the work that's being done. We have the learning continuity and attendance plan, of course, which has many of the things that are required under SB 98. We have a specific distance learning plan and then ongoing professional development on Wednesday afternoons. SB 98 requires that attendance be taken daily and that synchronous instruction occur daily. It requires that we have support to students and the follow-up to be able to support students and make sure that there isn't a loss of learning or to minimize it. Access to the internet, and I've shared the numbers of how many devices and how many Wi-Fi hotspots we have provided to the community and to our families. We have minimal instructional minute mandates, and we're certainly meeting those and going beyond those. And then daily and weekly engagement records, which the state is requiring of our teachers, which is a combination of ARIES taking attendance and engagement recording within ARIES, but also some other lesson plans and daily engagement records that teachers have that we need to keep track of as well. A tiered support, as I mentioned, it's a daily 90-minute period for scheduled support. In general, it takes place from 1 to 2:30 in the afternoon. And again, Mrs. Storm, after this presentation, is going to present on the work we've done with MTSS. And she and our TOSAs are doing an outstanding job of organizing that, and she'll share that with you soon. Two Wednesdays a month, we've set aside some time, both staff meeting time and professional development time, so that we can continue to work with teachers to help them develop the skills that they need to be successful in distance learning. All students can participate in tiered support time, and it's, as I've mentioned before, a significant commitment by our district to respond to student need. And so teachers having time to work with individuals or small groups every single day to make sure that kids are learning and engaged is fantastic. Our distance learning plan is a framework for teachers and parents to follow. Again, you know, the synchronous instruction and all the framework is listed there of what it looks like. You know, we strive to be rigorous and balanced, you know, but fair at the same time. And then, of course, you know, we provide feedback, assessment, and grading in a more robust fashion than we did in the spring, I would say. Right now, what's occurring at the beginning of October, it's crunch time in terms of report cards, assessment, you know, planning for to get us through the winter, and more professional. We're adjusting our report cards for distance learning. Some things are easily assessed in a distance learning format, and others are more challenging. And so we're adjusting our report card slightly and reporting on everything that we can to keep parents informed as to their students' learning. We're designing assessments to be you know, synchronous and efficient, and we've even eliminated one or two that we felt was just too difficult for teachers to administer in an online format. Of course, we're adjusting our assessments for kindergarten through second grade. It's difficult to do a one-to-one reading assessment with one student and a teacher in a via computer. It's a hard thing to do, but we're doing it, and we're training teachers on what that looks like and how to get that information from students. Interventions continue, and again, I'll let Mrs. Storm speak to that. We're providing planning time for teachers to do some planning to finish up from the end of basically the first trimester through winter break. So the planning that we did over the summer was primarily to take us through the end of the first trimester, which is approaching. And we're working with teachers now to develop a plan to do that curriculum planning so teachers are prepared between now and winter break. And then we'll see what the decision that the board makes in November and then make a plan accordingly in January for any further planning that may need to take place. Part of the professional development that has occurred is Monday Fun Day tech training. And Jen O'Hagan has done an outstanding job of putting together tech training for teachers. And that's offered to them at the very end of their instructional day for them to participate and learn skills on Zoom and Google Meet and many, many other programs that are useful for teachers in a distance learning format. And then, as I mentioned previously, Wednesday PD time is two times a month. And basically we have from 2 o'clock until about 4:30. It's a significant amount of time to work with teachers on professional development, professional learning community type activities, and staff meeting items. So in summary, distance learning, as I mentioned, it's really difficult. And all of you have seen the letters that have come from our family sharing their experiences. And I tell you, it's difficult to read those. And we try to make sure that we're reaching out to every single family and student that reaches out to us to help them to brainstorm, to troubleshoot, to see what adjustments we can make within the program to help them to be successful. We know that dual language immersion in a distance learning format is very difficult, and we continue to work with our teachers on that. I was at Pacheco last week watching the kindergarten teachers do an amazing job. And I wanted to ask them to come tonight, and I thought, right now, that's not something I want to put on their plate, but maybe at a future date, we can have them come and share what that looks like for distance learning. But, again, I say this relatively well, things are moving along. Our students are learning. I also receive a lot of emails and letters from parents saying that things are going well for their students. And they're appreciative of the efforts of all staff. And so, taking all things into consideration and knowing that there are some difficulties, things are going relatively well. Again, staff is working extremely hard. All of our classified personnel, certainly our certificated teachers, our administrators, really going above and beyond to make this as successful as it can be. The creativity, ingenuity of staff, it's really amazing to watch. We're adjusting our systems, our assessment systems, report cards to the distance learning format, and that takes a lot of thought and discussion to make that quality. We're planning also parent education opportunities. We use what's called the distance learning playbook for our teachers, the week before school started, and that was very well received. And there's also a distance learning playbook for parents, and we're looking into doing some parent education, and especially some parent education in Spanish for our English learner families and our Spanish. Michelle Hopper, our district lab, did an excellent job trying to get books into students' hands. And in fact, she sent me today a link of a van driving books around to schools. And she said, I see vans parked in our parking lot that, we're not using right now. Let's fill them with books and get them out to schools. So people are really being creative with how we can, get good learning into students' hands and also, do things that are not computer related. And then our virtual learning program goes smoothly as well. And I've heard from numerous parents about, how that program is going and how they appreciate being able to learn in that environment with more flexibility to get things done. So with that, I'd be happy to take any questions that you might have.
Thank you.
First, I'm going to read a comment that was submitted from Catherine Wattinas. In light of the county's sustained status in the red tier for 14 days and therefore qualified to reopen as of today to in-person instruction, would individual schools be making these decisions, or is there a district-wide directive to remain closed to in-person instruction regardless through 2020? Also, if allowed to be considered for in-person instruction, will the district be assisting individual schools in submission of reopening plans? And then we have Rachel Russell, who would like to address the board.
You're on mute, Rachel. Go ahead and unmute yourself. There you go.
Sorry about that. Listening to this last presentation, I would like to encourage you to, when it comes time to assess students, pay very close attention to the kindergarten through second grade results for the dual immersion programs. My child has learned almost nothing in 7 weeks. I also want to extend a personal invitation to each one of you board members into my home via Zoom to observe a day in the reality of this situation for a five-year-old learning 90% in Spanish when her native language is English. I want you to observe it. So you are invited. I've included you on my emails with Ms. Stevens at Baywood. And so you have my contact information through there. Feel free to reach out to me and please join me in my home and see what we're going through. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? All right. Thank you. We will now come back to the board. Mr. Buckman.
Thanks, Ellen. Amazing things happening. Rick, I really appreciate it. In this presentation, I note that in many places we talk about synchronous learning, and help me if my memory's wrong. Is there also asynchronous learning? Is there also one-on-one or small group stuff going on?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. So students have both independent or asynchronous work that they're doing as well. At the elementary level, many of the units of study, the curriculum that we use, are pre-recorded from the teacher's college, and those are rolled out asynchronously for students to view. And then in the afternoons, from 1 to 2:30 most days, there is small group instruction occurring, or even individual instruction occurring between teachers and students.
Anyone else?
Catherine,
and then Chris. Catherine, you're muted.
Okay. I do empathize with the parents who, especially those who are working full time and have a job, and then they're also trying to help their students throughout the day with their programs. And I'm wondering if there's any way we can help to ease their load by perhaps trying to recruit parents or members of the community who could do kind of Zoom sessions with students and like a sort of a tutorial. But I just wanted to put that out there as something that if we have any thoughts about how to organize that or how to recruit people for that, just hoping to help our parents out a little bit.
Absolutely. We do have some groups that are, you know, Cal Poly and other volunteers that are stepping forward. We're putting them through the normal volunteer, process of checking them out. If they're working individually with students, of course, they've got to be fingerprinted and that type of thing. But I'm also just today, in fact, I was talking to Big Brothers, Big Sisters. So we're reaching out and getting all the help we can possibly get to help students be successful.
That's excellent, Mr. Mayfield. Thank you. I'm also thinking of maybe of churches where there might be some parents who are individuals who might be, you know, have some extra time to spend on that too. But that's fantastic to use Cal Poly students. Thank you.
Chris.
Yeah, I just wanted to take a minute again to acknowledge the hard work of all of our staff members. Anybody who says that it's easy to be a teacher, that it's easy to be an aide, it's easy to be a bus driver, they really are getting it wrong. Our staff are working their tails off, and they have been working their tails off. And I want to acknowledge that. But I also want to acknowledge the hard work that our parents are doing. Mm-hmm. And I know that this is difficult. And it is my sincere hope that we can open schools as quickly and safely as possible. I think that's what everybody wants. And I just want to thank the community for their commitment to their children.
Thank you, Chris. Is there anyone else? All right. Thank you. We'll continue the hard work and with an eye towards reopening when it is safe to do so. That's what we all want to see.
Thank you.
All right. Our next topic is 11.03, multi-tiered system of support. Oh, wait a second. Yeah, update number one. Too many things to keep track of. And that's, I have Laura Storm. There she is. Thank you, Laura. Good to see you.
Good to see you. Good evening. I'm excited to share all of the work that's been happening with you. Before I share my screen, though, I have three people. I'd like them to take their camera or put their cameras on and wave. They are our MTSS TOSAs. So Chelsea Smiley, Michelle Cass, and then Brittany Tricamo started with us, but she's transitioned over to covering Sinsheimer. So they have been a huge, amazing part of this effort. And I wanted to acknowledge all of their great work before I present it. So thank you guys for everything. You're awesome to work with. And let's dive into MTSS, shall we? I'm going to share my screen here. And here we go. So what is MTSS? You know, it's multi-tiered systems of support. It's really a framework. There's no right or wrong way to do MTSS, as people like to say. But it's a way of kind of how you view things and a system of supporting students. It looks at the whole child. So right now our focus has been primarily academic, but it also is social, emotional, and behavioral. And it's really all students. We're looking at everybody. It doesn't matter, if you are struggling or if you are excelling, MTSS is for you. So I like to think of it this way. So there's always tiers in MTSS. Tier one, which is kind of, people call it core, tier two, and tier three. And I compare this a little bit to the dentist. I don't like to compare my work to dentistry, but that's the best thing I have here. So bear with me. But tier one, it's like that brushing the teeth, right? It's going to the dentist. It's having your teeth checked. It's doing that basic work. And so for us in MTSS, that is the universal instruction that every student gets and the universal screening that we do with some of our assessments. And then you move into tier two, and this might be when you have a cavity or you need a little more attention on one of your teeth. Maybe you go in, they fill it, and you're out, right? So this could be a student maybe doesn't understand a particular concept or needs a little bit extra support with something in reading or math, and we work on that. And then they're back to, you know, performing at grade level and accessing everything through core, and it's going well. And then there's the tier three. This is like the oral surgery, right? This is the intense, maybe the denture, something like that. So this is the more intense work. And this is where, we start to talk about things around special education and IEPs and really individualized instruction. And so with MTSS, we're always looking at, what is the problem? right? What is going on with the student or the group of students? Why is it happening? What are we going to do? And then, of course, is it working? Is what we're doing working, and are they progressing? And a lot of times, you know, students in tier two, they now have to start running as opposed to just walking kind of through the curriculum. They need to do a little running to catch up. So are we getting them to where they need to be? So why MTSS in San Luis Coastal? It's really all about equity and closing the gap and meeting all needs. It aligns perfectly with the three focus areas of the board. You even call it out in focus area number two, because you're about meeting everyone's needs and closing the achievement gap. So that's why we're doing this work, is we want every student to thrive and do as well as they can in school. We're going to support them to get there. So really, it comes down right now to three things for the how. We're working on strengthening tier one. Again, that's that universal core. That's the visit to the dentist. Using the data wisely. So the data that we are getting, what is it telling us? And how do we use it to move students forward and help teachers? And then that targeted tier two. And in distance learning, we've been given this gift of this afternoon tiered support time, which is something unlike we've ever had. And so really using that thoughtfully in different ways to meet student needs. So talking a little bit about strengthening tier one, I go back to those August opening days. We did that professional development work with around distance learning playbook and just the general instruction that all students were going to be getting. We have been supporting teachers ongoing with that. The TOSAs have been working a little bit with our new teachers as well. And then we've had this time on Wednesday. So we're getting ready to go through with elementary and revisit some things called learning intentions and success criteria, which really fall around teacher clarity. So students know, what am I supposed to learn and how will I know I learned it, which is really important in that distance learning environment. Even more so than the regular classroom. And I would say it's critical there. It's even more critical in distance. And then, of course, using data wisely. So we did some universal screening in September. We didn't have any data on students since March. We didn't really know where people were. So we did universal screening. We used something called FastBridge, which is new to our district. We assessed in reading first through eighth grade, and in math we did first through fifth on the coast and sixth in town. Well, no, not sixth in town, they did the MDPTP, sorry. But we did do some assessing with FastBridge, and it really guides our next steps. So I want to show you some FastBridge reports, because I think that'll help you get a really clear picture of what it tells us. So this is first grade. This is an entire first grade level group. This is called the screening to intervention report that you get from FastBridge. And you'll see up there at the top, it says grade wide recommendation. So it's saying that across the grade level, the first grade teachers need to do a little focus on some phonics. This really didn't come as a surprise to us. It was right on kind of with what we already knew. And then I covered student names there, but you can see it goes into where it talks about plan. So it populates an intervention plan. It tells you, is the student on track or do they need support in certain areas? And what teachers are able to do that's so phenomenal is they can take these plans and the accompanying intervention that's there and make groups. So you can see here, there's a group there that needs some onset rhyme work. And the beauty of FastBridge is it has the lessons that go with the intervention. So the teachers are able to make their groups, and then they're using their afternoons to work with those students in small groups on those really targeted needs. And it also tells us who's on track. We're also getting ready over there next to the recommended assessment. It says progress monitoring. And eventually, not right now in distance learning, but eventually we will look at starting to do that, where
you give, you know, the regular assessments to do the progress monitoring, and FastBridge will give us a line that tells us, is the intervention working or not, so that we can change course more quickly. So it's a really powerful tool, has a lot of great information in it, and really helps teachers get really targeted on student needs. And then I wanted to show you, because we also gave the reading at middle school. So this is a seventh grade class. And you'll see, again, we have some students that are on track. And then we have some students that have some different needs with kind of what would be supportive for them in intervention. And the middle schools approach this a little bit differently than we did with elementary. Elementary, we brought all the teachers in. We showed them how to read their screened intervention report, how to access the interventions that were in there. Middle school said, we want to have a general conversation about reading with our teachers. And I said, okay. And the beauty of FastBridge was, for the first time, I think, in a long time, every teacher, I mean, even if you teach PE, you could pull up and see all of the students rostered to you and their reading levels. And so they had these amazing conversations at LAMS and LOMS around how do students' reading levels affect, you know, their performance in social studies and what you need to support them with in math and that kind of thing, and really kind of broadening the data to not just live in the language arts department. And we know at secondary that happens a lot, right? Where we see, oh, well, you know, here's the reading performance here, you know, English teachers, you handle it. And so having that conversation around how do we target this in afternoon tiered support if we know that a student in our math class is struggling with reading comprehension, that's going to impact how they're doing in math. So the teacher can kind of support and give the right sort of help for that. They're not going to address the reading need necessarily, but they might break down the word problem or try to, you know, lower the reading level of it a little bit, that kind of thing. So targeted tier two, we've mentioned this afternoon tiered support several times. The student facing name for it is small group instruction. That's just way cooler than tiered support. So when you hear SGI or small group instruction, it's the same thing. And this is a lot of that intentional grouping, K-12. How are we, you know, putting students together to meet needs? How are we making sure that they are making progress, that they're not falling off the radar, that kind of a thing? And elementary, they're using some of the FastBridge assessments that are available. So you saw we had those students that needed that onset rhyme work. And so the teacher, you know, pulls that group and does works with onset and rhymes. To kind of target that and get them what they need. And then we're continually refining this small group instruction. And so we had a group of secondary administrators that came together with the MTSS team and said, you know, here's where we want to go. Here's what we want to kind of go to next with our teachers. They really wanted to make a bridge from inviting students to SGI for incomplete work and moving towards more intentional grouping. And so the MTSS team went out and really talked with teachers at the middle schools and the high schools and found people that were already doing that. And we got them on film talking about how they do it and put together, you know, slides and things that the administrators can use with their staff. So, you know, that's the most powerful thing, right, is when you hear your colleague, you know, down the hall, I guess, or down the Zoom is doing it. I can do that too. So kind of crowdsourcing some of that out, but really getting it in there and finding out, you know, what is going well with this and what is the needed support? So the TOSAs have been really great about, you know, making relationships with teachers and really having those good, deep conversations. So that's where we're at with MTSS. There's a lot going on. I gave you pretty, you know, surface kind of overview of things. And I know that it will continue to shift and develop as the year unfolds. And it will be interesting to see, you know, if we come back in January, knock on wood, right? Hopefully when we come back in January, I'm going to say what it looks like then. So, you know, what we do as far as that dentist screening when we get our students back in their seats, will be interesting. So thank you for letting me share with you, and you know, let me know if you have any questions. Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks very much, Laura. First, I'm going to go to the public. And as you answer our questions, Laura, if you could speak a little slower.
Jeremy just told me that. Sorry about that.
Okay. They've got a hard job.
Yes, they do.
And you're providing a lot of wonderful information that we want to be able to make sure everyone has access to. So first, I'll go to the public to see if anyone would like to speak with us. And there is no one, so we'll come back to the board. Any questions or comments from the board? Walt.
Well, this is really interesting because one of my concerns is when we return to in-person learning, how are we going to assess the impacts in virtual learning, which we all acknowledge is not ideal? How do we assess those learning deficits, and how do we remediate? This sounds like the approach. I'm just concerned that when we return to in-person teaching and learning, that we might overwhelm the MTS, the multi-tiered system support. I'd like some feedback on that, Laura.
Oh, I don't know about overwhelming. Maybe. You know, I guess we'll see when we come back. If we give those, you know, universal screeners, that, you know, initial trip to the dentist, see what we find out as far as student learning loss and gain and where everyone is at and what's needed. I mean, I fully anticipate that students are going to have things we need to do. The question really for me is going to be, does the whole class need it? Or is it like groups of students or just one or two? Because if it's the whole group, then that's something that we'll have to address in that universal tier one core, right? The teacher will just need to know they need to go back, maybe fill some gaps and then move forward. Versus if it's just groups of students, then we'll need to look at how we're going to address those in that tier two. So, well,
to some extent, you're doing this now with mm-hmm. assessing the impacts of these things and providing supports for it. So it's a wonderful program, and you guys are going to be busy for the foreseeable future.
Thanks, Walt.
Thank you. Anyone else? Mark.
Yeah, let me. Oh, I am unmuted. Laura, thank you. That's great. It's a really exciting program because of the ability to group and work with the kids. I'm really impressed. A small concern that I have is it seems like we can deal. Is the efforts that are made for the students that aren't great and the kids that aren't doing super well, is there that whole middle, is that taken care of? I think there used to be a report on losing the kids in the middle, but I think that was more about middle school. But the kids in the middle are getting the attention they need.
You know, I go back to that universal tier one core, right? And so you maybe noticed that on the reports I pulled up, there were some exclamation points and some red boxes.
Right.
And those are risk indicators. So an exclamation point, you know, one exclamation point in the red box is some risk, two is high risk. And then we do get some on track data, and then it does give you advanced. So we're really looking with the universal screening at risk. And I think that strengthening tier one and that core instruction, that's going to benefit every student, whether they're advanced or high risk, and especially those students that are on track, but they might just be barely on track, right? We know that happens. But the stronger our core is, the more everyone does better. So, yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
Marilyn.
Thank you. Hi, Laura.
Hi, Marilyn.
I am so appreciative of this presentation because I have been hearing about MTSS, but I now have kind of had it fleshed out for me. So that's great. And it sounds like a wonderful tool for helping students that need support. I have several questions. You, if I understand this correctly, you do an initial FastBridge assessment.
Mm-hmm.
And then do you periodically reassess the entire group to see where students are at different points in time? So some who initially were having difficulties and have been worked with individually and now are up to grade level, others may have realized deficits. So how frequently do you do that assessment?
You know, we're in an interesting spot. It's those assessments are very fast and very easy in person, right? But right. Giving them over the computer is a completely different beast. So we are going to reassess second and up in reading at the trimesters. So trimester one, trimester two, trimester three. Okay. We're going to reassess math first and up at the end of the year. The math assessment was challenging. It's computer adaptive, meaning that students have to get a certain number of questions wrong for it to adapt. And that's very hard to have happening in a distance learning environment. In a classroom, you can coach kids through that. You can explain, this is going to be adaptive. You're going to see things you have no clue what it is. That's totally normal. That's the science of the test. It's how it works. In a distance learning environment, you know, we had parents saying, why are you assessing our kids on something that they're not even taught yet, right? So right. We said, we're going to hold on math. We're not going to give up. We're just going to hold and do it at the end of the year, but we're going to do reading. And the next time I come, I'm going to have growth reports for you in reading. I can't wait to get my hands on this data. Like, it's awesome. So I'm such a nerd, really. But it's really exciting, the growth reports that come out of FastBridge. So we'll have that for you in November, December.
Okay. I look forward to that. And then when we talk about MTSS and when you showed us in the beginning of your presentation, it appeared to be hitting on many of the board priorities. And I'm wondering how it addresses or if it addresses social emotional needs.
So MTSS by its nature includes SEL and behavior. Right now, that has been sort of living over with Diane and the team at Student Services. Okay. I hope that eventually we get to a place where we can do more integration of that, because I know and you know that if a student isn't getting their social emotional needs met, or if they're having a lot of behaviors in class, then the academic learning doesn't necessarily come at the rate we would want. So, you know, Diane has been in on our MTS meetings and our planning. Right now, the team has been focused mostly on academics, but I know it's on everyone's mind to get it all wrapped together.
So at some point, it will be integrated, but you're working separate paths right now.
Yes. Yeah. Right now, you know, we're trying to do what we can in this crazy time.
I can't think of a better person than you to be working this assignment. So I really look forward to seeing.
Thanks, Marilyn.
How students do and how they grow over time. Thank you.
Thanks.
Mark?
I think Marilyn hit on it. It's great. I appreciate it. Thanks, Laura.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Any other questions from the board? Chris?
Yeah, Laura, and I think you addressed it, but I think it might be important for the parents to understand why assessments like this are so important. And I know there's a lot of concern a lot of times from parents that assessments actually take away from the learning. So could you talk just for a second about how assessments actually augment learning and how one of the three, you know, the three legs of the stool?
Absolutely. Without it, our teachers are flying blind, really. They need those assessments, you know, to know where students are at, what students know and what they don't know. We have an educational system that has more standards than it's possible to teach in a year. And so teachers need to be very targeted, and they need to see the strengths of their students, and they need to know what the students need to learn so that they can switch up their instruction and really meet needs. I think one of the things that we, you know, thinking about assessment, there's those formal assessments, right, that we do a report card and we report out at. You know, that's like the chef serving the soup, but I think it's so important to those day-to-day things that we look at as like assignments or activities, and teachers are always looking at them going, what are kids learning or not, right? That formative piece where the chef's kind of tasting the soup before they serve it. So we can't do strong work without that information. That's really just the bottom line. So I know it can seem time consuming and frustrating, but in the end, it's better for kids when we know what they know and what they don't know.
Thank you. I'm hopeful that as we experience, see what our kids are learning, that they didn't know what they might be able to learn and grow and have strength from in this environment. Maybe this is a little Pollyanna, but I'm also hoping that our students or that our teachers are learning and growing and discovering strengths perhaps that they didn't realize they had, and that we're here to support that, both the growth and the difficult times. And Laura, I think that's where you and Rick and Kim and Diane and other principals and staff really come in to help them as they navigate and learn and have their struggles through all of this. So we really appreciate what the teachers are doing and how they're learning and how the parents are learning and struggling. I mean, we really do try to be very aware at all levels of one another of how challenging and time consuming and overwhelming this is in many respects. So thank you for the presentation, that information. Rick.
Yeah, I just want to say one more time, what an outstanding job Laura's doing and the MTSS TOSAs. It's been so great to add them to ISLA, and you know, the dynamic conversations that we have around how to help teachers be successful. It's really, really exciting. And so I appreciate the support from the board and really appreciate having Laura at ISLA.
Thank you. All right, at this time, I'm going to ask quickly if anyone is still using the translation service. Can you tell?
I can't, no, I have no way to tell.
And if you are, if you would let us know, because we just have one translator here now, and if no one is using translation, then we can have her have a break.
Yeah, to identify that if you're using translation services, please use the raise your hand icon so we can see if you are utilizing translations. We'll just wait for her to translate. I see no hands being raised.
Okay, so Maria, if you would like to take a break, you've been hard at it here. I know this is really hard work you do. So thank you. All right, we are going to move on to something that is just nearly as exciting as our board minutes at the beginning of the meeting, and that is to go through some board policies. And we'll start with propose new board policies. We generally try not to have so many at one meeting, but due to circumstances beyond the control of all of us here, primarily having to do with this virus going around, we have gotten a little behind and need to get caught up. So some of these that we're doing now are, we're trying to sort them in a way that brings those that are more urgent to the top. So I'm going to, Kim will help walk us through some of these. Our first is a proposed new board policy with regard to maintaining appropriate adult-student interactions. And this is the first reading. Kim.
Thank you. Is it helpful to share the screen to display the proposed policy?
Sure.
Okay. Mandy, can you either display that or give me rights?
You have sharing permissions now.
Okay. Actually, the agenda went down. Would you be able to share, Mandy?
Not a problem. Give me one moment.
Thank you. Okay, let me go ahead and address the first one. So the first one, we have board policy 4119.24. This, as Ellen mentioned, is a new proposed policy. You will see that it's about maintaining appropriate adult-student interactions. Obviously, an important topic. You'll notice that it's all, black ink or red would be the suggested adjustments to it. I would say that on this one, you'll notice that the subcommittee had some reductions from this board policy just because of the fact that it seemed too detailed to be included in a board policy, and the suggested change was to include that in an AR. So this is the first reading of this policy. Happy to answer any questions and would suggest that it comes back for a second reading.
So first we'll see if anyone from the public has any remarks about this particular board policy. And it looks like no one. Then back to the board. Any questions, comments? None. All right. Thank you. This is a first reading. We'll bring it back. Next time it will appear in our consent agenda.
Thank you.
There are no comments.
Mandy, if you don't mind displaying the next one, 5141.52. So this next policy, also a first reading. This is for students and suicide prevention. We definitely have this policy in place. However, you will notice a lot of additions from Gamut suggestions, as well as the fact that it's been reviewed by the subcommittee and suggested changes there as well. I would clarify the term postvention. I'm sorry, my dog's going to protect me from all of you. So postvention, meaning that there's an intervention after a suicide, typically in the form of a support for those family members, students impacted, that sort of thing. So just clarifying that language. And again, first reading, I would suggest that you bring that back for a second reading as well.
All right. Anyone from the public have comments on this policy? And no one. All right, back to the board. Anything on this one? And no one. All right, next, Kim.
Great, thanks, Mandy. Next, we have board policy 6157. This is a very relevant topic. So thank you to the directors that review this, and Mark and Ellen, your board subcommittee that reviews this as well. So this is on instruction and distance learning. So interestingly enough, a proposed new board policy here. You will notice the gamut changes that are involved here. A couple of the key topics, obviously, that it does say that the district may offer distance learning in a variety of delivery methods. So obviously we're in this urgent situation now, but even as our instruction progresses over time, there may be appropriate times when we want to utilize distance learning in an effective manner. And of course, there's pieces it needs to comply with. So as a new board policy, again, I would suggest bringing back this one for a second reading.
Thanks, Kim. Anyone from the public want to speak to us on this one? No one? Anyone from the board? And we're good. All right. Thank you. Next, Kim is...
Yeah, you bet. Next, we have board bylaw 9321. So this bylaw is intentionally brought at the same time as the next one you will see. Gamut suggested the next board bylaw that I'll show you is the next item that it's completely removed. And so this is the suggested change here to this bylaw. This discusses closed session, the purpose, and as well as the agenda of board bylaw for closed session topics. It talks about emergency meetings, which obviously we've needed to participate in lately. Talks about confidentiality, things that can happen and cannot happen during those times. Again, Dr. Prater reviewed this as well as your board subcommittee. And since it's the first reading, again, I would suggest this coming back for a second reading.
Thank you. Anyone from the public? No? Anyone from the board? Thanks, Jeremy. All right. Thank you.
Okay. And the last one, just like I mentioned, this was Gamut's suggestion of consolidating this information. You'll see it covered in the previous one you just looked at. So we made sure just to bring these together because it is removing this language here and ensuring that the language is in the previous one that I just discussed. It is the first reading of this one as well has gone through the same process of review, as well as a big thanks to Mark and Ellen for being so conscientious going through these. And I would suggest a second reading for this one as well.
Thank you. All right. Anyone from the public wishing to talk to us about deleting a policy? No.
Well, Ellen, I can see Mark's hand there for you.
Pardon me?
Oh, sorry. I just was going to let you know Mark's hand was up for when you call for the board.
Oh, Mark?
Yeah, I just wanted to take the opportunity. With all the other stuff that's fallen on Kimberly's or Mrs. McGrath's plate, this going through these bylaws, these board policies is just a little added stuff. And we came into this backed up to begin with, and we're moving through it as fast as we can. But Ms. McGrath has done just an excellent job in bringing them forward. And I just wanted to take this opportunity to thank her.
Thank you. I appreciate your kindness.
All right. Thank you, everyone. These will be on our next agenda under the action consent calendar. All right. Next is 11.09, approval of a board member paid for permissible absence. Dr. Prater?
Yes. On September 10th, Mrs. Frame was unable to attend the board meeting due to an emergency in her family. And I'm asking for you to approve this absence.
Right. Anyone from the public wishing to talk to us about this? No. All right. Anyone from the board?
I would like to move approval.
Thank you.
I'll second.
Just get in the right place here. So Marilyn approves, makes the motion, and Mark second. All right, Mark?
Yes.
Catherine?
Yes.
Evelyn?
I'm sorry, I had to step out a minute. What item are we on? I'm sorry.
We're approving your pay for your absence.
It would be my suggestion that Evelyn abstain from this.
You can certainly, I already wrote down abstain at your slot, so you're abstaining from this.
Okay,
Evelyn.
Thank you. Thank you.
Walt Millar has stepped out of the meeting. Marilyn?
Yes.
Chris?
Yes.
And me, yes. All right, thank you. We are moving on to our action consent agenda, so please let me know if you want anything pulled. And you'll need to speak up and tell me verbally because I'm looking down. Approval of warrants and payroll, 12.01. 12.02, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. 12.03, approval of furniture and equipment request. 12.04, approval of purchase orders and Cal card purchases.
Paul?
That was more? Okay. All right. So I'm then looking for a motion on 12.01, 12.02, and 12.03. Chris?
Move the approval of items 12.01, 12.02, and 12.03.
I'll second.
Okay. Mark?
Yes.
Catherine? Okay, you can wave your hand, Catherine. I'm looking up.
Yes.
Evelyn?
Yes.
Marilyn?
Yes.
Thank you. Chris?
Yes.
And me, yes. So this carries 6-0 with Mr. Millar absent. And Mark, you pulled the approval of purchase orders?
Yeah, thanks. Just real quickly, I wanted to compliment the district staff. The board had asked for support for families in providing and subsidizing cost of child care. In here, this document shows about $300,000 to the city of SLO and about $160,000 to the YMCA. So I'm really impressed and I appreciate it. Also, if I'm correct, there was a change just to the way funds are presented. And looking at the end of the document, it's just really clear now. And I hope everybody can appreciate it from the public. That they can see the cafeteria fund, the adult ed fund, and the Measure D fund. And again, just appreciation to staff for doing that. I'd like to move approval of 12.04.
Right, Chris?
And I just wanted to point out for anybody that looks at these things, there is a fund, you know, a fund is where we put our money. There is a fund that is a special fund that was established for students at Morro Bay High School. And looking at that this time, you could see where the scholarship monies were going. And it was very exciting to see that happen for our Morro Bay students. And I just want to thank the scholarship donors for that.
Thank you. All right. So we have a motion by Mark. And we need a second. I'll second. So motion by Mark and a second by me. Go through the list, Mark. Yes.
Yes.
Catherine?
Yes.
Oh, good job. Evelyn?
Yes.
Marilyn? Yes. Chris?
Yes.
And me, yes. So that carries 6-0 with Mr. Millar absent. Okay. Next is, are anyone have anything for advanced agenda at this time? And reports by board members? All right. Thank you all very much. This concludes our meeting for this evening. Thanks for hanging in there, all 27 of you still with us.
Ellen, thanks.
Thank you. Good night.
Thank you.
The recording has stopped.
Okay, and from current slide, okay, so we'll just go over here. We meeting ended at 8:22.